This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, the Americans crashed the Canadian immigration website, Huawei enlists Waterloo's help, 200,000 Canadians might cut the cord this year, and we ask for your help to put together our 100th episode. That's all next, and more on the Canadian Tech Podcast. The Canadian Tech Podcast is sponsored by Olio Digital Labs. Olio are the planners, designers, and developers of the apps used by some of Canada's biggest brands. Find out what Olio can do for you at oliodigitallabs.com.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 94 for Sunday, November 13th, 2016. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Derek, and what a week. Between elections, Leonard Cohen dying, Robert Vaughn dying, a lot of famous people. It kind of sucked for a lot of people, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I'm still, all I'm going to say is I'm still wrestling with some of the news, and later this week, I hope to post something to help Canadians deal with it.
Exactly. Now, there's a lot of, there's just so much out there, and just, people have to step back and think. But I always say there is tomorrow. We can just keep improving. So we're actually only going to have one story kind of election-based tonight, even though we could probably have 28,000.
Yeah,
but we're going to be good.
This is the tech podcast.
This is the tech podcast, not the political talk podcast, exactly. So, but one thing that did happen on the election night of the U.S. election, once some of the results were starting to go a certain candidate's way, I guess the Canadian immigration website got crashed due to just sheer number of people, particularly from the U.S. I guess a lot of people are kind of thinking Canada might be a good possibility now that Donald Trump's about to come into the White House. Apparently, they normally get about 17,000. That's around the same time the previous week, and they had 200,000. That's a big jump. And of course, I'm sure a lot of people, once the news media picked up on this, a lot of people said, oh, let's go look. And I'm sure that was, happened too. So
it was, do you remember Slashdot?
Yes, the Slashdot effect.
Do you still go to Slashdot?
I still go to Slashdot.
Okay.
It's still there.
I know it's still there. I haven't been in a while, but this used to happen a lot to websites.
Yep.
And we call it getting Slashdotted. Or more recently, more pop culture-ish, it was the Colbert effect, which, of course, Stephen
right.
Colbert himself coined, because why wouldn't he? I mean, 200,000 users, that would crash most websites. So I'm not surprised that the CIC's website crashed. That's a tremendous amount of strain, especially when I think they're still running Java server. And certainly the styling of the 500 error that was showing up certainly lends one to think that, Apache Tomcat, that sort of thing running underneath or a Windows thing. I'm not sure. But either way, not Apache and certainly not Nginx. And impressive traffic.
Definitely not designed for that load. Yeah, definitely not designed for that load.
Impressive traffic, but half of those people were from the U.S. At least I imagine they couldn't get stats for all of them. But sorry, folks, we just couldn't put up with the demand.
So no sneaking across the border on your own. We do have high standards here.
Yes, absolutely.
We have our border guards patrolling on moose, watching out for you. So
and caribou just be careful. When need be.
And caribou when the need arise. You think those pictures are jokes? Well, they're not. But
just try and find out.
Exactly. Yeah, never piss off a moose. Moving on. So that's the kind of political stuff out of the way.
A moose once bit my sister.
A moose bit your sister.
Yeah.
I think we have our show title.
That's from Oh, God. That's from Holy Grail, the opening credits.
That's right. Yes. Yes, exactly. I had to think about that for a minute. All right, moving on to entertainment. This is kind of cool. Again, I was in the age when I was a bit older when the NES came out.
Probably, 13 or so?
Yeah, so I was playing computer games by then. I was never much into the Nintendo stuff. But yeah, you can get the Classic Edition. But apparently they're so popular, good luck trying to get one. This includes 30 classic games, but more importantly, it comes with an HDMI output. Now, if they could do this for Intellivision or the Atari 2600, I'd be all over it. This is kind of cool. Now, you're more of a child of the Nintendo era, so what do you think of this?
I think it's really, really cool. I think I was 4 when I first got an NES, so it was 1987 by then. But it was still around for several more years before they released the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. And I got one of those too. Used, I think. Yeah, it was used, but I got one as well. These games are right up my alley. Super Mario Brothers, love it. Legend of Zelda, my cousin had it. Metroid, I never really got into. Mega Man, I got into a little bit later. And I know there's a bunch of other games included as well. My boss, Brendan, managing partner at Olio, he wanted one for his son's birthday. And so Friday morning, first thing, he drove to the Best Buy and was rushing to beat all the soccer moms to the front door, as he put it.
Did he have to tackle a few?
Well, he didn't have to because he saw the sign, big, huge poster. It said, sold out already. And he's like, you guys like just opened. What the heck? And so he called a coworker and said, can you please, 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 please go to anywhere else and try to find this? And so our coworker went to, Walmart. They were sold out. And then so he got in line at Electronics Boutique and managed to snag one there. But by all accounts, this was sold out all over North America, including Canada. I know a friend who got one in Edmonton as well, but I think he was 12th in line, and there were 12. Oh, wait, no, that was another place here in London. But anyway, he managed to get one in Edmonton, but again, all sold out soon afterwards. And I mean, it has one major feature that I think everybody who ever owned a Nintendo or a Sega Genesis or a Super Nintendo wanted, which was a suspend point. Like, just bring me back to this point in the game when I start this up again. You couldn't do it. Mm. There was no memory in the system or on the cartridge to do that way back in 1983 to 1995, maybe. We finally got systems with features like that. The N64 certainly had progress saving and probably... we got it before that because games like Super Mario 2 and 3, you had restore points or, points where, like, you finished these levels already. Sorry, not 2. Super Mario 3 did, though. But anyway, that would have been great for a lot of these early games like Mega Man and Super Mario Brothers and Zelda. So, yeah, it's exciting. I don't think I'm going to get one. I've got a lot of classic games already on my Nintendo Wii. I'm really looking forward to the Nintendo Switch. I've got a Raspberry Pi that I still need to figure out what to do. I was going to put Plex on there, but I decided to put on my desktop instead. So I don't know. Maybe I might turn that into an NES emulator or something like that. So either way,
one option you could do is you can buy a second controller, and the classic controller you can use it with NES Virtual Console games on your Wii or Wii U. Because you can connect it to a Wii remote controller. So for those people who like that, just saying.
Yeah, just saying. No, I hear you. So this works with the Wii.
Yep, apparently it'll work with the Wii. The other thing is I love the display mode. You can have the old CRT filter.
Yes.
Scan lines and all, 4x3.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Pixel perfect. Each pixel's a perfect square. So, yeah, it's, hey, I love the old stuff. Again, I was more the Atari 2600 than the Intellivision. I still have the Intellivision here. I should try and get that out at some point, as well as with the Amiga. But, yeah, I remember a lot of these games.
Related news. Punch-Out. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say Punch-Out, Double Dragon 2. Yeah, lots of good stuff. Go ahead.
I was going to say in related news, although we'll move on as soon as I say this, unless you have something to add, is the Sega Genesis is coming back into production through an official partnership between Sega and Toy Joy or something like that. They're taking pre-orders right now for brand new systems similar to the NES Classic. It'll have games built in and all that. So if you're interested in that sort of thing, go check that out.
All right. Moving on, more on the research side. This is up at the University of Waterloo, and I always botch their name, so you're going to correct me, right? Chinese mobile manufacturer Huawei? No.
Huawei, yeah.
Huawei, okay. They've announced a new partnership. They've already been heavily involved with there. They're going to invest $3 million in research projects over the next 3 years, particularly on a number of ongoing 5G related progress. So, you know, that's the next generation of the wireless spectrum, significantly faster data speeds and ultra low latency. So, you know, with more and more devices going strictly wireless, it's getting tougher to find something with an Ethernet port. This is kind of good to see.
This is interesting. I'm a little surprised a company like Huawei or even ZTE or anybody else from China would be looking to Canadian universities for this sort of research. I mean, it's great. I'm not complaining. I'm just surprised that given the number of engineers they pump out of Chinese schools, Chinese universities every year, that they would need to come here. You know, there might be certain advantages of spending the money here. Certainly the government's been looking for more foreign direct investment and foreign money to spend on research. So this is a win for Canada in general. But
they did announce $16 million with the Ontario government back in March. Again, directly related to 5G. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you wonder why, but at the same time, I think it's good. Maybe they realize, you know, they might also have a lot of, you know, there's a lot of engineering students who come from China, who come over here to learn. So maybe something involved there. But again, good news. Any way we can get faster wireless. Now, if we can only get it for a lower price in remote areas, like, you know, just west of Kamoka, where my mom lives, would be nice. But, oh, yeah, that was my inside voice.
Well, so the thing with 5G that a lot of people are going to have trouble with is that 5G is more like an umbrella term for five or six different, quote-unquote, standards that are all going to deal with different things. So the fast speeds, ultra-low latency, you know, typical cell phone data type networks, yep, that falls under 5G and that's cool. But then there's also going to be really, really low speed 5G networks for Internet of Things. There's going to be really, really high speed ones for and high frequency of 5G networks for shorter distances. So 5G as an umbrella term is great, but you really got to delve into the details before you realize, like, well, which 5G standard are we actually talking about here? And it looks like, mobile CERT, unfortunately, didn't do a good job here explaining that at all, because they didn't explain it at all. And that's okay. They're probably talking about cell phone networks here, but I'd be interested to dig in here and see whether Huawei is looking for help across that umbrella of standards, or whether it's one type in particular. I mean, the one thing I could see Canada have going for it is that perhaps we've already allocated some of that spectrum, whereas the Chinese government has not, and Canada's landscape and climate is actually quite similar to China's. They don't get nearly as much snow as we do in the lowlands, but you know, rocks and lots of trees and that sort of thing. Like, it's a you can replicate a Chinese rural environment quite easily here. So.
Exactly. All right, cool. We'll continue on. This one's your story next. This is about some smart streetlights.
Yeah. Or, so
Go ahead.
Oh, smart streetlights. Okay, sorry, wrong story. Here we go. Yeah, so Las Vegas is getting what are called kinetic tiles that can power streetlights with foot traffic, which is sounds pretty cool. So there's a New York-based startup called Engo Planet.
Mm-hmm.
They've installed 4 streetlights in a plaza just off the strip in Las Vegas that are powered exclusively by solar and kinetic energy. They're not just streetlights, though. They also have a variety of environmental monitors. They support video surveillance and USB ports for device charging for anybody who's walking by and wants to take a little break. The streetlights have a solar panel crest on the top and quote-unquote kinetic tiles on the ground below them. The panels can reportedly generate between 4 to 8 watts from people walking on them, depending on the pressure of the step, of course. And that energy is collected by a battery for use at night. And especially in Vegas, that solar plus kinetic energy design is really good for days without too much sun, although I've never heard such a thing in Vegas.
Yeah, not in Vegas.
No, exactly. But regardless, if there is a day without a lot of sun, then you still have that foot traffic that can contribute to powering the batteries. So they have a host of sensors, obviously, that collect a ton of information. And details are sparse, though, at the moment in terms of what information they're collecting. But they do have a little promotional video that you can view here. And to top it all off, the streetlights also double as Wi-Fi hotspots. So and the color of the LED lighting can be changed with the season or perhaps for a local event. So that's really cool. And I think that's actually really something that could work just about anywhere, including here in Canada.
Exactly.
What are your thoughts?
Especially in busier areas.
Yeah, certainly. Like downtown cores with plenty of pedestrian foot traffic. This sort of thing would be really good. And you could potentially keep those streetlights off the grid entirely, especially if you don't pack them full of Wi-Fi hotspots and a million sensors and all these other things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Interesting. Okay. We were talking about Internet of Things a little while ago, but we talked about it. We had a story last week on how a lot of these botnets now are being directed by, unsecure devices. There's basically a story here out of Reuters where some of the manufacturers are actually realizing, yeah, they have to do something about this.
Imagine that.
Yeah, they were giving some examples, some Chinese makers. They recalled thousands of its devices. But yeah, there's Qualcomm's looking into new technologies. So it's more of a summary piece, but it's just interesting because we were talking about it last week and how all the various vendors look like. Hopefully they're going to start working together on this by making some industry groups.
I don't even care if they start working together. I just want them to take this seriously. Here are some things that need to stop, right? You need to stop sending out devices with bad passwords, bad default passwords. You need to stop sending devices out that have the same SSID in the case of a wireless access point or a router across all devices. Those devices also need to be updated for a certain period of time. Companies need to commit to providing security fixes at least for, I don't know, 5 years maybe. Like, it needs to happen. And the bad thing for these companies is if it doesn't happen, you're going to get legislated instead. And
yep. You don't want that.
You don't. No, they definitely don't want that. So step up and do it first instead so that you can head any government off at the pass. And then just generally speaking, it's been much better lately, but more vendors need to take user experience and user interface design way more seriously so that their devices are easy to use and easy to administer. And you don't have to have your CCNA from Cisco in order to understand how to mess with your home router. If there are features in there that you need a little bit more experience with, you hide them under the advanced tab or something like that. Like, you don't need to expose them all the time. You just, you hide them a little bit, make them an extra click to get to them. And then the people who don't need them won't touch them and won't futz with them. And then they won't mess up and cause a security hole in their network. So, like, it's not that hard.
A lot of it's just common sense.
Yeah.
No, it's common sense, a lot of it. And it's just a matter of getting people there. But it's, yeah, we certainly, you know, we're certainly not there yet. And we definitely need some of these people to step up. Yeah, really, there's not much more we can say.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
Hey, that's all right. All right, moving on. And again, following up on another story we had a few weeks ago, we talked about how the various cable providers have their $25 basic TV plan as mandated by the CRTC. But I guess that's not enough. Still a lot of customers cutting the cable or not interested in coming back. One analyst has actually predicted it's on pace to lose. Canada's on pace to lose almost 200,000 TV subscribers this year, which is an all-time high. I was actually talking about this with someone the other day. They were saying, you know, they don't need all these extra channels. All they want to be able to have some basic channels and Turner Classic Movies without paying an arm and a leg.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still not there yet. And again, you've got some good quotes in the CBC article from Sophia Harris of the CBC. Basically, you know, they're quoting people saying, I'm quite happy with Netflix. I'm quite happy with this. Or I went down to that and then I realized how much it was going to cost. So I just decided to cut the whole thing.
Yeah.
No surprises here, is there?
Nope, none whatsoever. I've been saying a lot of this for a few years now. Like, the basic TV plans aren't great. You know, if you do want to add one or two channels on top, the cable company or satellite company still make you order some sort of ridiculous bundle that has 10 other channels you don't want. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and therefore you still end up paying a lot more than you should be or than you want to be, at least. And so you just say, forget it. Like, I'm just not going to bother.
Yep.
You know, we've lost some options here for online services, over the top services like, HockeyStreams.com, which also ran BallStreams.com for basketball and a few other sites. Mm-hmm. They went under last year, which was a shame. Turned out they were actually a Dutch company with the European rights who were, you know, offering services to pretty much anybody. But for whatever reason, I guess they couldn't make it work financially.
Right.
So they're gone, which was really disappointing because I was... if I didn't have access through my dad's account for Rogers NHL Game Center, then I was going to potentially get Hockey Streams, but now I can't even do that. So, yeah, like Netflix is great and Crave TV seems to be doing well. So I might sign up for Crave, but I can't justify even $25 a month if you're going to start throwing in channels in there that I'm not going to watch.
Well, and that's the problem. There's just so many. And the problem now is, even if you look at that, some of the models for the channel, they're showing the same crap over and over. Like, you know, like, I'm sorry, but when history TV shows, you know, reality TV, what does that have to do with history? You know,
Discovery, the Discovery
and
company of networks.
You know, arts and entertainment, you know, like the stuff, like when arts and entertainment first started, that's what it was. Now, you know, yeah, do I really need to see another rerun of the latest, like I said, the latest reality TV or latest home fix-up show? And it's just, it's the same dreck over and over again.
Remember when the Learning Channel actually taught you things?
Yeah, exactly. And what, you know, what do they have now? You know, unfortunately, it's we can talk about the lowest common denominator, but
honey,
it seems
boo-boo,
like
buddy. Honey boo boo.
Yep, exactly. Seems like, you know, a lot of people aren't interested in, you know, learning or whatever. They just want to sit and, you know, because people are obviously watching it. They're getting, you know, the ratings are there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like what does, you know, it's all, yeah, it's all, I'm just looking at the Learning Channel website now. It's like, oops, sorry, there's sound in there. But it's like, it's just all reality TV crap. You know, it's like, this is why I download stuff from the BBC or I watch, you know, there's a lot of people, thank goodness, on YouTube that will put stuff that it's in Europe and that, some good documentaries and stuff like that. Like, I have no problem, you know, there's nothing wrong with relaxing and going mindless for a while. But, you know, I'm not paying over $100 a month to have this and 20 minutes of ads every hour.
So here's the thing. If you want to just go mindless and put something on, just find a random YouTube thing and then turn on autoplay. Yeah. It's pretty much the same thing. And you might even enjoy it a little bit more because you can actually pick your starting point. So like Late Night with Seth Meyers or Colbert Report or I don't know, some sort of news thing. Turn on autoplay and then you'll get stuff like that. And you'll get stuff based on your history, your viewing history. And it'll probably be a lot more enjoyable than watching Honey Boo Boo and Dance Moms and who knows what else on cable that you're paying $60 or $70 a month for.
Exactly. It's just, yeah. But again, that's us probably, but you know,
who knows? No, it's not just us. I know lots of people like that. I know so many people with a Netflix account now, and then you ask them like, so what do you still watch on cable? And they're like, sports. Like, you know, like that's the big thing still, sports.
Yeah, live sports seems to be the thing. But, you know, they're slowly getting better, too. Mm-hmm. So, but,
paying for, like, if you want to watch the Raptors and the Leafs, I'm just using...
Yeah, it gets expensive.
Or
yeah.
Let's not ignore the folks out west. If you want to watch the Canucks and the Flames and the Oilers, or even just one of those teams, you want to see every game, you're still paying $300 a year for cable. Well, that's $50 or $25 a month right there for one service. So those services need to come down in costs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, yeah, until then, because, yeah, there's just, like I say, it's the old adage, 57 channels and nothing on. It's so,
57,
so true.
5,700 maybe.
These days now. Yeah, exactly. Okay, moving on. Also back to security. The security team behind Chrome, they're unleashing a new change come the beginning of the year. You want to tell us a bit about that?
Yes. So first of all, I want to start off by saying it's really cool that there's four women featured in this article, not a single guy. Awesome.
Exactly.
Way to go. Very proud of this team of Emily Schechter, Adrienne Porter-Felt, Emily Stark, and Parisa Tabriz. I hope I didn't butcher your name too bad. So, this team has decided that, I agree now that they mentioned it, the padlock in Chrome, to a lot of people, looks like a purse.
Yeah, when they mentioned that, I went back and looked, and I went, yeah, they're right.
Son of a gun, and it does look like a purse. And now I can't unsee it, of course.
Yes, of course not.
And so, you know, they did some more research and came to the conclusion that the existing methods for displaying to a user that the site that they're visiting is a secure site. Not only does it have an SSL certificate, but they're not serving up any insecure assets like my website just was up until just before we started the show.
That's right.
Yeah, that it's just it's not clear enough, and so they figured out a way they could do that. And so I'm going to scroll down a little bit here. There we go. And so starting sometime in 2017, probably early on, they're going to do things a little bit differently. So instead of just the padlock in Chrome, it'll show a green padlock with the word secure beside it before displaying the domain name. An insecure site, so just a normal everyday site, will have a lowercase I with a circle around it and says not secure, but those are fine. And then a site claiming to be secure but not for whatever reason, big red triangle, exclamation mark, words in red, not secure, before showing the display name. So it's going to be really, really obvious to folks which sites are secure, which are not, and which are claiming to be but are not. And those certainly are sites that could just be poorly configured, but potentially are malicious sites. They could be using a self-signed certificate, which is not recognized by any browser unless you manually add an exception. So, the rest of this article goes on to talk about how even Wired Magazine, a bunch of other people the New York Times have been saying for a long time, we all need to switch to HTTPS. Everybody needs to encrypt everything now. And that's not easy on a really big website. Wired, it took months to do. The New York Times still hasn't switched over to HTTPS by default. And certainly they sympathize. But this is a big deal because... not only does Chrome have a big market share, it has more than half of the market share now. Did you know that?
I knew it was close. I didn't realize they were over half now.
Yeah. When I read the story, awesome. I looked up some numbers. I looked at three different sources, and the lowest number I found was 54% of all web traffic was coming through Chrome now, and up to 59% for one company's metrics. So... this is a big deal. If you own a website, and you could check your analytics yourself, you know, depending on the website and your market, your numbers may skew a little bit more towards Firefox or Safari or Internet Explorer and Edge. But regardless, this sort of thing is becoming more and more important. And, you know, even if it's just a quarter of your traffic coming through from Chrome or potentially 80%, again, depending on your demographics, this is the sort of thing you're going to need to pay attention to.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's nice that they're making it easier for people to tell. I'm sure my parents, people like my parents or, you know, their age can't tell very often or don't know where to look. And this is going to make it way more obvious.
Well, this explains why so many of the older folks get hacked, because they keep thinking that it's a purse for sale.
Yeah.
Purses for sale. That must be it. You know, explains it. But yeah, I can't unsee it either now. That's the problem. Very much so. But yeah, anything that's going to, you know, it's going to be challenging for some, you know, for some people who run websites. But I think it's, you know, it's a step that has to be taken.
Well, I mean, if you have a basic website, $20 a year and changing some things in WordPress will do it for you. Some things in WordPress and modifying your htaccess file. If you can't do that yourself, find a web developer.
Find someone who can.
Come to CleverHost. We'll do it for you. It's a really big thing for us. Find another web host that will help you with this and has good support, because they have every incentive to help you as well. It's not that hard. Find a local web developer, you know, whether an agency or not. Come to Olio. Come to CleverHost. We'll help you out with this sort of thing. Because
especially if you're a business and whatnot, if you're out there selling your services and that, this is something you really got to think about. Because as you know, as Google's doing, more and more people, that's the way of the future. It's definitely going to be so.
And one last point, if you're interested in design, they do talk about here a bunch of different security indicators that they considered. So that's interesting too.
Cool. All right. Another close to a local story, but up in Stratford. Now the Stratford Festival is over. There's a large festival parking lot they use, but right now it's pretty quiet. But right now there is a mysterious black curtain surrounding it. That's because the Waterloo Center for Automotive Research have teamed up with a few industry partners. They're doing a month-long trial of some automated vehicles. So this is in kind of a closed track. And some of the questions I have, one of the things they're looking at is winter conditions.
Yes.
You've got things like these cars do lane detection, and they often do it by using the lane markers on the road. Well, what happens, of course, in Canada, we get this thing called snow. And believe it or not, Derek, it actually covers the lane markers.
No.
So, you know, yeah, apparently. You know, who would have thought, right? It's things our friends in California don't think about.
We've got to stop that. There.
Yeah, we do. So, yeah, it's interesting. So they're going to be kind of playing around with stuff like that. So there's an article in London Free Press here. One thing I found amusing is they said the black curtain around the fencing isn't necessarily for security or for not people not being able to see. And it's because they don't want the car's LiDAR and sensor units and radar units to get confused right now if a car goes by on the road outside. So,
fair enough.
Yeah, kind of cool. You know, this whole autonomous driving thing, it still blows me away, you know,
I'm
how they're
so
going to program.
Excited.
Oh yeah. But I'm just, you know, how do you program for everything? It's just, again, this just fascinates me.
You don't
do that. And again,
you
is
don't
a good
program
example.
For everything. So
no,
yeah,
but this is a good example where, you know, when it snows, what do you do? You know, how do you know where the road edge is, or do you end up with a lot of autonomous vehicles in the ditch along Highway 7, the first snowstorm?
Uber's testing in Pittsburgh. They get plenty of snow, so we'll have some good data there. And I'm not sure about Tesla. I think Ford or GM is testing in Michigan. So as long as they continue those tests through the winter, we'll get plenty of good snow-related data there as well.
Right. Okay. All right.
I've seen it a few times. I know friends of ours have seen it a few times. I saw in the wild a week and a half ago, I forgot to mention it last week, an Uber mapping vehicle in London driving up Wellington Road South.
Okay. I saw a tweet about it. Someone said they're around.
Yeah.
So there we go. Yep. So, yep, the future is coming pretty damn quick. Okay, our local story. Our good friends at Big Viking Game, where one of our co-hosts, John Pylon, works, they just announced $21 million in financing and in debt financing for 2016. They're hoping to raise $60 million more in equity financing in the coming years. What I find interesting about this is actually the Royal Bank of Canada, in addition to Export Development Canada, joined together to raise $18 million a part of the deal, because normally your big banks, you know, they're not always into this sort of game thing here, but obviously they're seeing that the mobile casual game market, particularly with microtransactions, is a huge growing thing. And I think they said it's profitable with a 55% compound annual growth rate on revenue. That's pretty high.
It is pretty high. I know they bought Yovil back from Zynga a little while ago. Sure that cost a little bit of money. And the good thing for us on the outside is, you know, this proves that Big Viking Games has decent revenue, because you don't get the sort of debt financing, you don't get a line of credit or loan like this unless you actually have revenue and can pay it back, right? That's what the bank wants. So there's probably a decent interest rate on this, enough so that RBC obviously felt worth it, and they did enough due diligence to realize, or to come to the conclusion rather, that there's a good chance we're going to get our money back. So that's great. It shows that they're not just a flash in the pan. So.
Right. Well, I remember when they started, just a couple of people at the research park, and now they've got offices in London and Toronto, and they're still growing. Like, they're still asking for people. You know, they're a big company. They're doing well. It's a good success story for London and area.
Yeah, apparently they're going to go on a hiring spree now, so should look out for that for anybody who's looking for a job in this space.
Keep an eye. You too can work with John Pylon.
That's not a ringing endorsement.
We'll see if John's listening or not. All right, now we're going to pause for a word from our sponsor, our good friends at Olio. They have this wonderfully pre-recorded ad. So here we go.
Hi, folks. Derek breaking in here with an ad for our sponsor, Olio Digital Labs. Do you have an idea for a mobile app, a problem that needs solving, or disparate pieces of software that need to speak to each other? The team at Olio Digital Labs is here to help. Olio are the planners, designers, and builders behind the solutions used by some of Canada's biggest brands, and they can also help you. Olio offers custom mobile and web applications, websites, and platforms. To find out how Olio can help you, call 226-785-0420, email derek@oliodigitallabs.com, or visit oliodigitallabs.com to learn more about the company and its services. And now, back to the show.
All right. Thank you for that pre-recorded ad. And as always, we thank Olio for their support of the Canadian Tech Podcast. Okay, stuff we like this week. I've been on holiday. I've just been kind of looking around, catching up on some stuff. And I'd heard about this game coming out before called Star Citizen. It's looking really good. It's in alpha now. You can buy it. But I'm not going to do this thing that some people did with No Man's Sky, where a lot of people, this thing was delivering a lot. But this looks pretty impressive. It's a space exploration you know, the technology behind it is you can explore, you can mine, but what's neat is you can go down to a planet and they've rendered, you know, every pixel. So you go down through the atmosphere, you go down and you get on the surface, and then you can drive a vehicle around, and, you know, almost like a sandbox game. But yeah, it's in alpha now, actually. And you can, you know, you can purchase a ship, and it's, you know, it's kind of in progress, but I'll wait a little bit. But yeah, it's looking pretty impressive. There's some very cool YouTube videos right now with some actual gameplay. And it looks kind of cool. So, you know, I don't have a lot of time for games lately, but it's something I might have to have a look at. So definitely have a look. It might be worth checking out. Okay. What do you got, Derek?
So last minute thing, I was just going through some browser tabs while you were talking there, and I realized I came across Nextcloud earlier this week. Nextcloud is a fork of OwnCloud, which a lot of people have probably heard about. OwnCloud is a file sharing and collaboration platform, basically like a self-hosted Dropbox or Box.com. It used to be Box.net. Box.com. Nextcloud takes everything a little bit further. So yes, Nextcloud will store all the data that you put on there. You can, but the really cool thing is it'll also aggregate data from other places. So FTP, Dropbox, a network attached storage drive you have at home, that sort of thing. You can use Nextcloud as your gateway to access all that stuff. So that's really cool.
Interesting.
There are mobile apps as well. There's a web interface as well. You can create and send password-protected public links, just like Dropbox and Box.com and OneCloud, and or OneDrive, rather, and stuff like that. Second-factor authentication is available as well. They have an example here of using TOTP, which is a QR code you need to scan with the TOTP app. Not something I've used before, but regardless, it's in there. You can even do some workflow management in here, file tagging, do some triggers on physical location, user group, file properties, etc. There's some monitoring available. You can see how many active users there are, other activity, comments, tags, downloads, etc., file modifications, the mobile and desktop clients I mentioned. I mentioned external storage, but there's some other popular cloud service providers listed here like Amazon, Google, Dropbox. You can use the WebDAV protocol to pull things over from other places. And what's really cool is it'll encrypt your data at rest for both your local and remote storage. So that's really neat. Calendar, contacts, really nice looking calendar, nice looking contacts. Like these, they're really this is open source the way it should be. A really, really nicely designed, easy to use interface, which is fantastic. Makes it a lot more attractive. Audio and video calls built in. They use Spreed.me technology, using the WebRTC protocols, which is how you can use Skype through your web browser and that sort of thing now. And then, last but not least, I will mention a self-hosted version of Collabora Online Office, which itself is taken from LibreOffice. It's the web-based version of LibreOffice. So All your Word docs, your Excel docs, your ODF, you can read Visio docs, you can use Publisher and that sort of thing. Good fidelity, WYSIWYG, what you see is what you get. It's not perfect, but it's certainly coming along, and it's usable. All that for the low price of $0 if you don't want to pay anybody to host it for you.
Interesting. I like the idea of if it could host some things on a NAS. I'm still trying to find an easier backup solution for a lot of the WordPress blogs I run, because you know, some of them are big. They don't need to be backed up often, but they're big. And the idea of if I could just have them, you know, I debated setting up an FTP site on my NAS, but then you always worry about, okay, is it going to be that secure? But this looks like it's kind of, like you say, a combination of Dropbox and stuff like that. You know, it sounds like it could be the go-between. So I would just set up something that way. Maybe I'm gonna have to look into this.
Yeah,
this
if you want like a VPS with some attached storage to it, I'm gonna be offering that soon through CleverHosts. So
Oh, that'll be there. You go. See, yeah. Another reason to look at CleverHost. So, exactly.
I'll give you another reason in like a minute.
Well, you know what? I think that's the perfect segue. So why don't you tell us what you're up to lately?
Sure. So I'll do the CleverHost thing first, and I'll mention the other stuff.
Yeah.
So I enabled the new, relatively new auto SSL module in cPanel, and eschewed Komodo, and instead went with the Let's Encrypt project for free SSL certificates, believe it or not, for all domains. So if you don't have a domain, or if you don't have an SSL certificate now, if you're on CleverHost and you're listening to this, no, I have not formally announced this. I'm still doing some testing, but everything looks great. I was just messing around with DerekSilva.ca before we got started here. I have not purchased an SSL cert for that site, but the one from Let's Encrypt is working. It's valid. I had to make a couple of tweaks to some third-party hosted images for some images on the front page there, or on my sidebar, I should say, and it works. So like I mentioned earlier, I need to put in an HD access file to redirect people to the secure site all the time. But otherwise, yeah, free SSL certs for all. So that's
awesome.
That's up and available. It should work now. So whether you're the London Food Bank, S. Clark Consulting, who else we host? AMPrecision.ca out in Brantford. Everybody's got an SSL cert. These are the free, quote unquote, low end domain validation certificates only. If you want that fancy green bar that Olio has on their website, or Amazon or Best Buy, I'm not even sure Best Buy has it. Nope, they don't. Maybe when you're buying stuff, but Amazon does, and a bunch of other sites, the full green bar that shows you're on a super secure site, that's not free. That's called extended validation, and that still costs a few hundred dollars a year. But the one that normally you would sell for $20 a year, something like that, that's free now. So, definitely check that out. Otherwise, I installed the Plex media server on my desktop, my elementary OS desktop. That's running. So I'm going to start using that again as a media server with my Roku soon. And we started some home renos. My wife's been tackling the kitchen after spending the whole day yesterday prepping and then hosting the National Girls Learning Code workshop. That happened everywhere across Canada yesterday, and here in London as well. So but since then she's been tackling that. And I'm doing my part, you know, unscrewing screws that won't come out and helping her move things around and stuff like that. And then we're
generally staying out of the way.
Absolutely. And then we'll tackle the basement together and make it a little bit better for the kids to play down here and stuff like that. So, that's what we're up to. What about you, Stuart?
Well, I'm in the last day of my holidays. I took a week off from London life. So we were doing a bunch of more unpacking and did some day trips here and there. Actually, we went to Museum London today. I had a look through there. That's always a nice spot to go, admission by donation. So that's always good. And they had an exhibit just ended today about some old historical photos of like London businesses, of life behind the scenes, stuff like that.
Okay.
So that was good fun. They also have a good exhibit on cursive writing, writing that no one seems to do anymore. And it had like old typewriters and pens and stuff like that. So that was actually pretty interesting as well. Doing some more on the digital purge. As I said, I've been using the do program to save me a bunch of space. I should be keeping track of it. I wish I was, but I probably saved myself at least a couple of gig up to now already. Probably tens of gig, not up to a terabyte yet, but yeah, slowly sorting things through there. So back to work tomorrow. Things get busy again. We got several projects going on at work, mostly social committee stuff. We've got the work Christmas party coming up, so we're doing that. We have they had a really good system, by the way, for that. They used Eventbrite, but then they used a separate behind the scenes SharePoint thing so people can actually register their seats.
Cool.
In the hall, we have a floor plan of the hall, and people, they get their code, and then they just can register their seats so they can see that they can sit beside the people they want to. So that was kind of cool. Done by our
reinforce the
digital services team.
reinforce the cleats. Yes.
Done by our digital service team. So that was kind of neat.
Yeah, so, no, yeah. They do some good work. So that's cool. I'm glad you guys are leveraging them for some internal stuff too.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and that's about it.
Question for you.
Yes, sir.
Are you watching Mr. Robot?
I am not. Please tell me about Mr. Robot. You know me. I don't watch TV.
Okay. Well, I don't have USA Network, and I don't have cable, so I'm going about other means to acquire the episodes. But it's a really, really good show about hacking, and really good true-to-life hacking, which is the really neat part. The Wired.com, or not Wired, Ars Technica talks about it a lot, about the show, and the great lengths that the that Sam Esmail, who is the creator and writer and sometimes director of the episodes behind the show, has gone to bring in experts, actual security, you know, experts. I know Cloudflare has allowed some of their folks to consult on the show to actually make sure that they're using real command line commands, real hacks, real things that you can actually do with Raspberry Pis and Android phones and stuff like that. And this is a really, really enjoyable show. The main character is played by Rami Malek, who people might remember from the Night at the Museum movies. He played the Pharaoh, whichever one was in the movies. I can't remember now. I'm sure he's done other things since then, but that's where I remember him from prior to the show. And he plays a really cool character named Elliot, who has some mental issues that have been playing out over the first two seasons. I'm a season and a half. Actually, no, I'm almost done season two, so I'll be all caught up. And I highly recommend it. If anybody's up for a show that actually shows how hacking really works, and you actually get like some narration on why he's doing what he's doing and how it works and femtocells and stuff like that, it's actually really, really neat. So, yeah, and a cool story.
Yeah, sounds interesting. Yeah, I just looked it up. Two seasons so far.
Yep.
I'll have to check that out.
Probably only 10 episodes each, so it won't take you long to catch up.
There we go. Good. Good. All right. Well, I think that's about it, unless we've got any other announcements. I don't think we do.
I don't believe so. No.
No. We're hoping to have some special. We might be doing some more interviews coming up soon.
Yes.
So we're hoping to have those out. We're going to leave it a surprise.
Well, I think we'll make that our 100th episode. Would that make sense?
Yeah, maybe we'll do that. Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, that'll be around the New Year-ish. Yeah, that'll be right around New Year's, like Christmas and New Year's.
There you go.
I think that'll be a good time to put that out. So I think we should actually put the call out, like for people to talk to. You okay with that?
Yeah, I think that's good.
Okay, so what we're doing is we were originally approached by a company called TradeRev out of Toronto to talk to their CEO about the tech skills gap and what they're doing there at TradeRev to help fix that, at least within the company. And so we thought, you know what, this would make a really cool special, like a special episode. And it's taken us long enough to book, not their fault, our fault, to book the first interview with the TradeRev CEO, which is finally happening tomorrow night. That we thought, you know what, this would be a really good 100th episode, show, and we should all absolutely talk to some other folks. So if you run a learn to code program, if you went to a program like HackerU or, Lighthouse Labs, or even went down to the States and did a similar program there at like Assembly or something like that. Or if you own a company that is having a hard time filling the seats because of a skills gap in tech, or what would be really great is to hear from some folks who are trying to get into the tech industry after working for a while somewhere else, whether it was in manufacturing or another office job or what have you, construction, whatever. Please email us. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We can not use your name on air if you don't want to or something like that. We can accommodate that. But if you could email contact@CanadianTechPodcast.ca, hit us up on Twitter @TechPodcast_CA, or on Facebook at, did you make it Canadian Tech Podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Canadian Tech Podcast. Find us on Facebook. We really appreciate getting a wide breadth of opinions and solutions and frustrations so that we can actually put together a really thorough episode. And maybe, just maybe, we'll come to some solutions and some answers.
Perhaps. You know, maybe finally companies will listen to us.
Maybe.
Maybe. You never know. I don't know.
Just put us on your product management team. We will make great products for you.
We will make it happen. Because, you know, we called some of this stuff before you did. Let's look at it that way. So, all right. We are done. So don't forget to review us, iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, wherever else you get your podcasts. Don't forget to retweet us on Twitter. We talked about Facebook and Google+, or even better, tell a friend. You know, definitely let them know. We're trying to do this for all you folks out there. So if you have any suggestions, again, contact at CanadianTechPodcast.ca. So for the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 94 for Sunday, November 13th, 2016, my name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Thank you and be well.